This is Make Something Cool. I'm Alex Sugg. Today I'm sitting down with Mike Smith. Mike is the co-founder and art director of Smith and Diction, which does incredible design and brand identity work. Mike, thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk. I discovered your work through a recent-ish, I guess it was maybe released last year, brand identity that you did for Exposure, which is a really cool site that it's kind of like where you can host your photos and tell stories and things like that. And I was just so impressed by the work you did on that I really wanted to get you on and just really kind of dive into the topic of brand and brand identity and how you approach it as a visual designer. So, I mean, I guess maybe to start, how do you think about brand identity? Maybe that's like the most general question I could ask, but it might be a good place to start.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like how I got into brand identity and what it means to me is like what the question is. It's just like, I grew up, you know, in suburban New Jersey, skateboarding and being obsessed with skateboarding and art and all that kind of stuff. And then it was kind of like the number one thing that I think about all the time is like the Volcom logo. And that's just like, anytime I make a logo, I'm like, is it as good as that one?
Yeah.
And that's kind of just like been burned into my head. And like when you're a kid, you like wrap your books in that, like the brown paper bag, and then you draw on it all year. And that's So it's just like, I used to draw like the Spitfire logo, the Volcom logo, and just anything and everything, you know, Element, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, you're as a skateboarder, your life like is surrounded by the kind of like the brand identity of a thing. Like when you get a cool deck, you're like, oh, Powell's making dope stuff, or Element's doing like partnering with great artists to make these really, really cool things. And then you kind of inherently tie that to the logo. And that's the basics of how I got into design, was just like through the skateboarding lens. And you know, that's how I got into art too. So it's all together.
I have to ask, what was your favorite, if you have to look back, what's your favorite skate video? Because I grew up skating too, and there were like so many, but I'm curious what you liked.
I mean, the classic that changed the game of everything is Yeah Right. And it's just like, you know, they had those like little sections where they did the like the green screen skateboards where they're all just like rolling through LA with like no boards. They're just kind of like floating through LA. And that was just like, and they're doing like, I think Costin does like a nollie heel back lip on like that super famous rail. And then like, there's no board there.
There's no board. Like, yes. That was so iconic.
And that's, so it's like, Yeah Right's kind of like the easy way out because it's super artistic and whatnot. But I think like a lot of like the Habitat videos and like
Habitat,
even like
I was
Alien,
gonna say.
Yeah. And even Alien Workshop was doing like some of the really like artistic like film noir stuff, like doing like a lot of scene setting and a lot of like, you know, they're filming birds flying through the skies in different patterns in between like skateboarding. It wasn't just raw skateboarding. It was like skateboarding is more than just the tricks that you're doing, you know, whatever. And then you have like Jamie Thomas jumping off that like leap of faith or whatever and smashing his like legs and everything. So but what else? I mean, there's also like Sorry was like a huge thing where we all witnessed like Arto Sorry completely obliterate his existence. And same with Ali Gulala jumping down that 20 or 21 or whatever it is. But
I know, man. Yeah, the culture was so fun. I grew up heavily in that, and I don't know if it's still as prevalent.
I think it's like Nike is or like Nike got into, you know, skateboarding and all that kind of stuff, and it really turned into a sport. And like back when we were skating, I guess it was more of like a lifestyle of like, you know, it was still like kind of underground a little bit. Now it's like full on mainstream. Like there's HBO shows about like chick skateboards and stuff.
So. Right. Yeah. That's cool. I remember I think it was Baker Kills, maybe Baker. I dug the Baker videos because they were just like gnarly. Like their whole brand was just how can we be as gnarly as possible. And there's, I remember this one video, I think is Ben Gilly, I think was his name. And he did like, it was like a 35 step, and he did a 50-50 down a rail down like 35. It was just the craziest shit ever.
But
so inspiring. How could you help? You have to go skate after watching a video. That was like the most inspiring thing ever.
And I feel like even today's kids don't know about like 411, which was like awesome.
Oh,
like that's
like
how
so
I
good.
Learned. That's like how I learned how to skate, like through VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So
dude.
It's like you're also watching like Willie Santos trick tips where you have to download the video for like 2 hours.
Yes, exactly.
Just to see just to see a dude do a kickflip in slow motion.
Exactly.
I feel like it was the golden era back then. It's like, just like things were funny. The art was good. Like it Definitely. Was like pre-Jackass. So you kind of like saw Jackass like come to life in that time.
Right.
I don't know. It was just really cool. And like you said, it's just like, you couldn't help it. Like after watching the stuff, you're like, I have to go ride. I have to go do something because like other people yeah. are like doing the dopest stuff I've ever seen, you know?
For sure. For sure.
And well, now kids cool, are like man. Filming stuff on Instagram. Like they're doing Instagram tricks, like, you know, tray flip, nose grind, nollie tray out. And they're just like, oh, that's just an Instagram clip. That's not even totally. In a video.
I know. I grew up in New Mexico and then we moved to New York. And now I see like, I don't know, middle schoolers who are legit mm-hmm. like pro level all around, just yeah. doing the craziest yep. shit. And I'm like, this is wild. The quality has yeah. just gotten so much better.
The quality is scary good. Now I have like a group chat with just like a few friends of mine I grew up skating with. And we just send videos back and forth of just like, how is this possible? Like
right.
we would spend all day like learning like a kickflip front board or something. And then like these kids are like 10 doing like 900s, like literal 900s.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's crazy. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious.
Anyway, back to design.
No, but I think it's like totally integrated. And I think you're right. I've actually never made that parallel to myself, but I think that's so mm-hmm. true because I think even from a young age, you kind of, you know, you identify your favorite skaters or your favorite brands and you kind of start to like connect yourself with them. Like I was a big Toy Machine. Mm-hmm. I loved the Toy sure. Machine brand. I loved their art. I loved Enjoy. I loved like some of the more funny, like kind of like mm-hmm. shitty on purpose, but because it kind of really mm-hmm. fit the vibe of like what, but I don't know. It was like very much a brand identity. And so it's interesting that kind of was inspirational for you to get into actual visual design. Was it like, were you like in your early 20s, late teens when you started actually transitioning into design work? Was that just always what you were doing in the background kind of?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So like, you know, to kind of keep going on the skate stuff, it's like I grew up and like I was skating Transworld and Thrasher and all this stuff. And then like I would cut out the pictures of like, you know, constant nose sliding down like, you know, 15 or something like that. And then like put it on the wall and be like, oh yeah, like that's a dope trick. And then like through time, you're like, oh, but that's also like a dope photo. And yeah. then I was like, oh, like I'm really interested in kind of capturing. And that's what we were talking about, like kind of like the habitat and all that kind of stuff of like, there's an artistic side that you can explore through the lens of skateboarding. And that, so I was like really into filming and I was really, really into kind of like making sure the tricks like were smooth and landed right and all that kind of stuff. And just like kind of capturing the, you know, the vibe a little bit more consistently and more like with a higher quality.
Sure.
And so I was like, okay. And I was doing the same tricks over and over again. I was just like not really progressing in skateboarding. Like I was just like, okay, I can frontside flip like anything. I can like kickflip almost anything. But now I'm like, I was starting to then be like, oh, I'd rather film my friends doing like really cool stuff, like, you know, like a nollie tray or something like that. And it's just like, I was really into capturing that a lot better than some of my other friends were doing when it came to filming. Like when it came to filming, my friends were like, they also wanted to do their tricks. So like they didn't want right. to film you because they're like, I'm trying to get in as well before we get kicked out. And I was just like, right. it got to the point where like I made the transition into like, I really enjoy filming. I really enjoy doing photography and stuff. And that's kind of like, I got really into doing photos and was kind of like exploring that territory. But then I was still kind of in that, the skate magazine world of like the photos need type with them to kind of like make sense. Sure. So there needs to be a logo on it for it to feel finished. And that's, you know, when you grow up being a photographer in a place where you don't know about skate magazines, you might look at a photo and be like, this photo's done. Like, this is a great photo. But right. to me, I'm like, where's the text? Where is it telling me what this trick is? Where's the photographer credit? Totally. Where's the logo yep. in the corner? Like,
yep.
And then, so that's kind of how I got into like making things feel complete. It's like it needed the logo, it needed the text, it needed the kind of like other things. It wasn't just a good photo by itself.
Yeah, for sure. No, that makes sense. And you probably have a natural knack for seeing the full picture of it, you know? Like there's mm-hmm. probably a little yeah. bit of instinct in that too, where you're like, you can look at a photo that somebody else would say, oh, this looks finished, like a finished photo. Mm-hmm. And you have the instinct to say, no, it's missing this, and this.
Yeah, absolutely, really complete yeah. it. Yeah.
So, I mean, so then you transition into design. Like, I'm curious, you know, maybe we don't have to do like your whole design origin story necessarily.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that can be not as fun to listen to as like how you tackle design now, and then maybe if you want to go back and maybe lessons you've learned through the time of you being a designer in this way. I'm curious, maybe starting from a clean slate today, how do you tackle a new brand identity when someone approaches you? Like, what are the steps? How do you start? How do you think about it? How do you work with the client or the person to like drill down into it? Because I think a lot of people might think like, well, a logo is just a logo, or a name is just a name, or things like that. But like, the value of a good logo and a good name, it can be priceless if it's done correctly. So I'm really curious how you dive into that process now.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess the biggest like thing that I could suggest to anyone that's like doing any kind of stuff, it's just like being like endlessly fascinated by like literally anything. Like, everything is interesting at all times. Like, anything anyone is doing is interesting. And it's like, if someone loves what they're doing enough, like they will find a way to make it interesting. Like, if you're doing, you know, something in finance, like if somebody really enjoys finance, they can explain it to you in a way that feels really exciting and really cool. Yeah. And they can kind of sell. And I guess it's like kind of like a little bullshittery of like an entrepreneur type person is selling you on it. But like, I really just look for people that are also like all in on this thing. They're not looking to like, it's not about the money for them. It's like not about like, and that's even design. Like for us, it's like, it's not really about the money for us. Like it's nice, but like,
sure.
I like just sitting here and making like little things. You know what I mean? Like, I just love to make, it's like a tiny thing that will go be on a hat or something. And then one person thinks it's cool enough to wear. And that's like a good day for me, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess like in terms of process, it's just like, we do a lot of listening. We do a lot of kind of like asking questions. I'm married to a copywriter. So like we sit and talk and think like a lot about every project before we take it on and make sure that it's something that really is like something that we find interesting.
Mm.
And then we kind of sit down and talk to the person, you know, talk to the person, the client or whatever that's doing it, and just ask them a bunch of really kind of like disarming questions. You know, it's like not, we try not to put like a lot of like, we don't talk in a way that, you know, through what you've seen through my case studies and stuff, like that's how I talk to my clients too. Mm-hmm. Just like, we try to keep it extremely conversational. We're not about that like big agency seeming like we're big kind of situation. It's like, we want you to feel like it's just us, because it kind of is. And you kind of will tell someone a little bit more when it feels like really personal.
Mm.
And it's not like they're just dumping this like discovery questionnaire into like an agency, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Where like a strategist is going to read it. An art director is going to read it. The designer is going to read it. And it will get so diffused by the time that it gets to the person that like, what's the point of having the conversation in the first place?
Sure.
So yeah, that's like how it starts. And then I know this is like kind of a hot button topic at the moment on design Twitter, but like we pull mood boards, and I think it's really important to pull mood boards, because like, I like to have the client kind of come along through the identity. I don't want to be the kind of studio that's just like, you know, the Paul Rand kind of situation or whoever, where it's just like, here's your one logo. This is it. This is all you get. Now go away and use it. We like to have them, clients like kind of come along and tell their ideas along the process, because like at the end of the day, like I'm not the person who needs to live with this thing. Like they are. And so we go through and we pull mood boards in two different directions that kind of have a lot of like different random things or, you know, type styles, color styles, symbols and all that kind of stuff. And then I love to do it because like, it's a low risk way for you to then put something creative in front of a client who might not be creative. And you say like, hey, what do you think of like this, you know, geometric thing? And then like, oh, I actually want it to be like a little bit more like blobby and weird and personal. Right. I don't like this kind of cold geometric stuff. And that's a way to do that kind of and have those conversations without anyone getting their feelings hurt or without the client being like, oh, well, this is my logo. I need to like, maybe I should give it more of a shot or something. Like when it's something that somebody else made, they could just be like, oh, I don't care about that. And I don't like it at all. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that like is a really good, easy way to set up bumpers for your kind of creative process, where you're not making 10 different logos because you don't really have an idea of what they like. You can make two or three in this kind of like, you know, zone that you know is a zone that they're interested in, and then kind of move forward from there. But the thing that everybody's like upset about is mood boards is that it's creating this kind of ubiquity in terms of like the design industry where everything kind of looks the same, like, you know, Airbnb, all the, like the lowercase startup logos and all that kind of stuff where everything's flat, everything's sans, everything's kind of got like a quirky little thing next to it and then some sans serif type. And to that is like, yeah, you can, that can happen. You can get stuck in that kind of mood board loop world where you're making the same things if you're pulling those kinds of things. But I think it's really important to be like, that can be a reference point, but how do you make it different? How do you make it weird? How do you make it like unique to the person that, you know, you're working for? Because every person, every company is a unique thing. I mean, most, I shouldn't say every, because like some companies are just copycats, but like, right. You got to do your best to find the people who aren't the copycats, and they deserve something that is different, that is unique, and that is totally for them. And, you know, the mood board loop only happens if you let it, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, that's so interesting to me. I had Emily Hayward on the show a while back, and she's the founder of Red Antler. And Red Antler is an advertising, you know, they've done a bunch of amazing
things. I'm reading her book at the moment.
What is it? Obsessed? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Emily's amazing, and what Red Antler's done is amazing. But there's a little but there where I feel like everybody, at least that I see a lot of the times, it's become like, and I think Red Antler was one of these brands that was like one of the, you know, they kind of pioneered this way now, but a lot of people just look like Red Antler copycats, if I'm being totally honest. And that means they've done something really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. I agree that if you're just looking at like, you know, classical advertising or brand work or things like that right now, it is really hard, I think, to get like distinguish yourself from these trends. And I think you did it. Like I think of the exposure work you did. I think you struck a really good balance of both like what is trendy now, but also could stand the test of time as the trends kind of go away. How do you, because I think the mood board, like as you were talking about that feels like just such an obvious way to work with somebody is like, that's how, if I were a client, that's how I would want to work is like, walk me through every step of this to feel good about the direction we're going. But you're right that you could end up just kind of looking like everything else depending. So how do you escape that?
Well, I mean, it's hard because it's like some clients aren't creative people. Most clients who hire creatives are not creative minded folks. So they're just like, they see Airbnb and they're like, I want to be that.
Right.
That's like simple. I want to be Nike. I want to be Apple. I want to be clean. I want to be whatever. So they don't really understand the nuance of like how to do that in a unique way. And so it's really, really hard to kind of like strike that balance. And I think It's just a personal thing. Like, and I credit skateboarding for this as well in terms of like what our studio is. But like, you know, you can see like Rodney Mullen and Daewon Song, like their whole thing of just like, they were both doing like wacky shit.
Right.
But Rodney was doing it in this like scientific kind of like weird way. And then Daewon was doing it in a little bit more of like an artistic way. And like, they're both doing the same kinds of things, but they're doing them in two completely different angles. And so I think that like, I kind of take that approach with like my life as well in terms of like design. And it's like, I know that I can make the Airbnb like aesthetic. I know I can do it, but how do I do that from a different angle? How do I come at that same thing, but from a different perspective? And that's kind of like my whole existence is just like, make this simple thing first. Like we're creative people. You can do it. Just make it and be done with it and see how easy it is. So you can pat yourself on the back and you can say, look, I made it. It's great. I made the easy one. Then put that away, never look at it again, and then do the hard one. Because then that's when you're going to make the thing that's super different and super weird. Because it's like, you know you can make the easy one. You give yourself that credit. And then like, you can then go on design Twitter and be like, I'm the best. But then sit down and make the unique one. Because like, that's the one that everyone actually wants to see. That's the one that's going to be like an interesting story to tell and whatnot. And I know that sometimes it's just like the budget's not there to do that kind of stuff and spend that kind of time. Your creativity on the client side is not there. They're not going to appreciate the kind of like unique take that might be a little bit wonky, might be a little bit weird. But the truth is it's not for them and it's not for the budget. It's for you to then push yourself because a lot of designers I talk to are just like, how do you kind of maintain this kind of, how do you keep it interesting? How do you not get bored doing the same things over and over, over and over again? It's like, the truth is it's like, I sit down and I literally make something that I didn't think I could. And I pushed myself to make something I didn't think I could, because it's important for me to feel that, even if I know that presenting it is a stretch, and I know that like talking to the client through it is going to take a lot of salesmanship and a lot of kind of like, you know, chatting to be like, the concept here is really deep and it ties to your values and all this other kind of stuff in a very, very abstract way.
Sure.
But, you know, it's for me to make sure that I feel like I feel creatively fulfilled and whatnot. So I'd say always leave room to do something that feels a little bit more wild, a little bit more unique, you know?
I love that. I mean, and even outside of just design, like any creator, like I feel like I'm currently in this phase now where I'm, you know, for me, my creative project is working on this in this podcast, and I'm kind of at a little bit of a crossroads right now where I'm considering trying some new stuff on it, but it would mm-hmm. be way harder and way riskier yeah. and way different and way more unique than what, you know, I'm currently doing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cool, I've been doing this for a while. It's gotten good traction. People like the show the way it is. So I've kind of checked that box.
Sure.
But I still have this gnawing feeling inside where there's a better, bigger version of this that I could go do. Yeah. But it's scary. But I think like, and it might not work the same and might not be whatever. But I think even just for me, it's worth mm-hmm. going to find out, you know, and doing the work. Mm-hmm. And even if you just find out, like, you know, you do the legwork, you do all this extra stuff to where you're like, I made something I didn't know I could make. And I proved mm-hmm. it to myself, you get to carry that with you. Even if it doesn't quote unquote work, even if the client doesn't go with that logo, they go with the first one, mm-hmm. you still get to mm-hmm. have that knowledge and that experience and things like that. I think that's really valuable for like any creator to go through that. And I think yeah. in the world we live in, you know, in the startup world, tech world, even creator world, we are very much in like this MVP, like minimum viable product, get as much out as fast as possible, just quick. And you know, when mm-hmm. when that's the culture, the quality tends to drop because it's just all about sure. quantity. But I think that if you're focusing on quality and really going the extra mile on your work, that's ultimately how you can cut through the noise, is making really good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's like, cause you know, the thing that you make that's really unique or really difficult might not be what is right for this project or whatever, but it might be right for the next project. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You could be like, oh yeah, I was messing around in Photoshop and I did this like blending mode that like when I put two pictures together, I got this like dual kind of like overlap. Like, oh, now that ties to the concept of kind of like duality and whatnot. And then you can bring that, you know, that thought process and sure. that thinking into a different project that solves a different problem. But you'll never get there if you're not, you know, trying that kind of stuff. If you're just like, I'm going to make geometric logos for the rest of my life, you're going to live a pretty sad life. You know, there's only a bunch of, you know, there's a square, circle, triangle, hexagon, whatever. But it's like, you're going to run out of shapes, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You got to tell stories with different shapes now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious how you balance how much work you do. Do you do any work that's not client work now? Do you do anything that's like just for fun, just like any side projects, anything, or is it all like based in client work?
It makes me extremely sad to say I do not.
Okay.
But I try to make sure that the stuff we take on and the client, we have some clients that aren't like super high paying clients, but the creative freedom is like, that's what we kind of use as right. like the fuel for us. Like, I don't work at the rail park anymore, but like that was like one of those kinds of deals where like, we were in there so early days that like they didn't even have an executive director. It was kind of just like a board and some random people. And they were like, hey, like you can kind of do whatever you want. And then, so I did whatever I wanted for 6 years. And then like, it was really fun. I made yeah. some like fluorescent green maps and like, we kind of got to do a whole bunch of stuff. Like rules didn't apply to anything that we were making. And then they got a new person in who wanted to, you know, put some rules on things and I didn't. So we don't work there anymore.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, is that like, is that just a choice based on like time and like, you know, like you're only working with clients now purely based on like bandwidth and you're not able to do stuff on the side, or do you prefer it that way? Like you feel like you're getting creatively fulfilled enough with just the mm-hmm. client work because you're good at selecting good clients.
It's like a mix. Before I had a kid, like I was like, I had all these big ideas of like, oh yeah, I'm going to like, I was doing street art. I was doing all kinds of like putting up big posters, painting murals and stuff. And that was fun. And then I had a kid and it was kind of just like that time now I want to be spent with my family and like kind of just reading her a book or something, like, or just teaching her how to like go on a bike ride or something like that, because that just felt like more important in like the grand scheme of life.
Yeah.
But there's also the second where we're very, very thoughtful about who we pick and like the kind of the creative freedoms that we get to have in those circumstances. Like, we don't take on, you know, a lot of jobs where we're being told what to do.
Mm.
And that I feel like is like really kind of what hurts a lot of people, is like when someone's just like, do this, 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 and your day is just a checklist. Like, that's like the worst feeling as a creative, when you, and the pandemic has really pushed that forward, of just like, when your day is a checklist, it feels like shit. Like,
yeah,
it truly does. If you don't feel like, you know, we're designers, so there are kind of like these like bumpers or walls that we get to bump into all day long, that we're not kind of going, you know, crazy, but like having the ability to think about things and to kind of bounce into the walls is what I think is what makes Smith and Dixon work, and why I don't need to do outside kind of work, because we do get to do some creative stuff. We get to make some weird things. Like, it just really kind of, intentionally doing it and doing it within the hours of 8 and 4.
Yeah.
So
this might be a weird question, but you just mentioned like thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I feel like I'm in this space personally where I'm trying to, I was journaling a couple of days ago and I realized, I just wrote down, you're not busy, you're distracted, to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we fill our time so much to where we don't actually leave space or time to think very well. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, do you have a system for thinking? So say you're working on a client project, and you said, like, you know, give it time to think through things, because you're not going to just get like amazing ideas off the bat every time. How do you make space for that, to think through a project, to have time to like let something simmer, to come to something? Is there anything you do or even not do? Like, do you avoid certain inputs or certain like things to make sure you're clear-headed and thinking through stuff? Like, how do you think through that?
That's a great question. I feel like most times, like, the concept of what we do, like, of the brands that we make, like, the concept always comes first. Like, the idea of like what needs to be kind of portrayed is like what we kind of work for first. And like, my wife and I will just take days off where we'll just go walk around this place called Longwood Gardens out in Pennsylvania. It's just a big garden. It's beautiful. And we'll just walk there for the full day and just talk about it. And just talk about the client that we're working on and the avenues of which we can kind of like approach an angle, different angles and all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about the concept. And even sometimes, like just a few weeks ago, we went and just read for a few hours together. And, you know, that's just an important thing to do. Like, this little cube that we live our life in is not the end. It's not how people experience life. And so why should you like come up with ideas in that world as well? And so we kind of just try to make sure that we always have enough room to sit and talk about things for at least an hour, where we just talk about ideas. And I think I can thank 160 over 90 for that. They were really, really good. When I was first starting out design, there was like this little glass, like fish tank that they called a conference room that overlooked the whole city. And you would just sit in there until it was done, and no computers, no books only. You just sit there, you get the idea out, and then you go back and do it. And I didn't really like it then, because like, you were sitting in that cube for 4 hours and then the day was done, and then you'd still have to work at your desk for another 8.
Right. But,
so now that I run my own thing, I can put that time into the process of creating it. So at least an hour of no computer time, just sitting and just talking. It's important to talk.
Yeah. What do you think? I'm sorry to nerd out about this, but you talk through it, which I think is valuable in and of itself. Cause I think a lot of like me, a lot of my processing is just done through like journaling, just like me talking almost to myself, you know, through written words. Sure. That's like how I think through things. Talking sounds like an amazing way as well. Why do you feel like you need to get away from the computer to get clarity on this? Like, is it just that it's a distraction machine? Like, what is the value of getting away? Because I think for me, I tend to be the type of person where I'm like, I need to double down and do more tasks, do more stuff, write out more shit to get in a good spot to like achieve what I want to achieve. But it sounds like for you, you're stepping away, and that's what gets you to a good place.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of both. It's like, yes, it's a distraction machine. It's like, it's so easy to bring up Twitter or bring up whatever. And I also think it's a ubiquitous machine of, like, again, with the mood board problem of just like, well, that idea has already been done. Let me find it. And then you spend 5 minutes trying to hunt down some advertising campaign where it's already been done before or something like that. Or you're also like, oh, I saw that on Pinterest. I have it on one of my mood boards. And you go try to find it instead of just like letting the idea like breathe and letting the idea exist. Even if it already does exist, like, it's important to kind of just let something grow a little bit. Because you might even be like, oh yeah, like a flower logo has been done a 15,000 times, but how do we change it in a different way? Cause it's so easy to write things off. It's so easy to be like, it's been done. It's been done. It's been done. It's like everything's been done.
Right.
So when you're not sitting at the computer, it's not easy to then go remember everything that's been done. And it's like, it gives things a little bit more of a room to flourish, room to kind of like just grow, even if it's not the right thing, you know? But so that's kind of important. And maybe that's why we go to a garden. It's literally the same metaphor.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to think about, like, because at least for most of what we do, it gets for online creators, it gets published online. But it's almost the thing, too, that can, you know, I'm thinking of it like you're cutting your own ideas off too early, maybe, because you go searching for things that might be similar or things that, you know. And even for me, I find that it takes me off track very easily too, of just like, I can't, it's hard to focus on one thing for very long. If I'm, you know, scrolling Twitter and it's like, you go through 20 tweets, suddenly you open up 20 different thoughts from 20 different people. And it's like, you can't focus on anything that way, you know, for very long.
Well, then you also get into the territory of like comparing yourself to anything. Cause it's like, you're going to see on Twitter, you're going to see like some stupid stuff. You're going to see some celebrity stuff. Right. You're going to see some, you know, but then you're also going to see like the Eames Foundation putting out like some of the best work you've ever seen. You're also going to go see like Instrument and Manual working together to make like one of the best like archives of like Eames and whatnot. So it's like, you're seeing stuff that people have been spending years working on in the same breath as people who are talking about tweeting on the toilet. Right. So it's like,
right. Yeah.
The disparity between the kind of, the ephemeralness of all that stuff, and it's all being treated with the same kind of hierarchy. It's just a complete mess to the creative process in terms of like, you see literal shit and then you see some of the best shit you've ever seen side by side. And it's just like, you can't, there's no way to put yourself into like a space that like, where you're comparing yourself in a healthy way. It's just a mess.
Yeah. How do you as a designer deal with comparison?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think about it too much. I'm like, as long as I make like what I'm making and I'm happy with what I'm making, that's kind of like what I'm really excited about. I guess I'm like pretty self-centered in that kind of way of just like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
And I just like, as long as I'm making some stuff that I'm having fun doing. And I think that's like a big, big part of it. Like once I stop having fun with the project, like I pretty quickly drop it.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's just like, life's too short to be like worrying about like anything on Twitter at all, or just anything in any kind of design space. It's just at the end of the day, like, if you're making cool stuff for cool people, then like, that's all you got to really worry about.
That's enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, we talked about a lot of the diving into brand and things like that. What are some common challenges? Like, what's the most common like thing that you run into while working on, like maybe, and I'll link it in the show notes, but I think like the exposure rebrand is a really, really cool example of something that it took a while to make. You know, you have a great case study out on like the process of it, all kinds of different things with it. It seems like working with Luke was probably a pretty cool client to work with, but I'm sure there are still challenges that you hit along the way. What are some challenges that you face in building a new identity?
I would say the number one challenge that a lot of designers don't really respect is just responsibility in terms of like what you're handing to someone. And that's something I struggle with like pretty much constantly of just like, okay, like they hired me to make something really cool, but then I'm handing it off to a team who can't do it. You know what I mean? And that just seems like super irresponsible to me. And trying to build systems that are like playful, fun, unique, and also responsible is an extremely difficult task. And it's just like, that's just the reality of like most of the small businesses we work with. It's just like, they might have a friend and a friend who helps them design on the side, or it might be a small startup that has like an intern or a junior designer or something like that. So like trying to make a system work is really, really complex and important. And it's only something that I've been interested in like later in my career. Like before I was just like, I'm making dope shit and that's all I want to do. Yeah. I just want to make dope shit and I don't care about the fallout of like, you can't handle this later.
Can you dive into that a little bit? Now, I don't know if everyone listening will know like what a system, what you mean by that, like
sure.
People who couldn't handle it.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, if you're making something in Photoshop that has like 13 layers of blend modes on top of it to get the effect of like a duotone photo or something like that, that's just like really, really hard and complex for someone who's like just out of school or just kind of like figuring out, like they might not understand that like you got to turn off like two layers or something to make this other color appear or something like that. Or even just color relationships, I think, are something that a lot of people struggle with. And like, I like to build these massive color systems because like I can use color well and I'm really excited about color. And a lot of people are like extremely overwhelmed when they get more than three.
Mm.
And so building systems that are a little bit more responsible in that scenario is really, really hard, really, really interesting, and a very, very dynamic problem to solve in this world. But then same things with like type hierarchy. It's like you got like an eyebrow, you got H1s, H2s, H3s, body, and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's easy for us because we sit down and we do this all day long. So I'm like, yeah, the H1 just gets bigger, and then the H2 is italic, and then the body copy is the sans, and they're all good. But like other people don't have that kind of like experience and don't have that knowledge. And so trying to build systems where that is kind of thought out is really difficult to hand off to someone. And that's something that I struggle with in terms of like being responsible and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, cause I relate big to like, I'm dangerous. Like I know enough about Photoshop and enough about like brand design and things like that to be dangerous. So I'm not good at it,
yeah.
But I know enough to like get by.
Yeah.
But I think like for what you're saying, so when you build out a brand identity, you're basically building almost like I've heard it referred to as like a brand Bible or a brand guidelines or something like that, where it's different typefaces, different color schemes, different things that you can use in certain scenarios. And then you pass that mm-hmm. on to a design team. So you say that's been tough for you to like manage that part of it versus in the past.
Yeah.
In the past where it's been like, I'll make you a sick logo, I give you the PNG and we call it good, basically.
Yeah, kind of. It's just like, yeah, I'll make you some cool stuff and then you can call me when you need more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's a good way to do business because you'll keep getting business and it's, so that's kind of a good thing. But then just like, as you get older, you kind of think about kind of like the longevity of things. And then also at the same time, grappling with the idea of like longevity of brand no longer exists. It's like Instagram is a completely different channel than LinkedIn. It's a completely different channel from Facebook. And like your outside marketing, your website, all that kind of stuff, it's all kind of, growing and in this like kind of blobby world of brand at this moment. I feel like we live in this world where nothing matters, like no websites matter, because it's like, what's your website matter if people are only interacting with you on Instagram?
Right.
Nobody cares about your website anymore. You could just have a splash page with a cool video on it,
right.
And then you're done. And then you kind of spend all of your money on Instagram marketing, where no designer I know actually wants to be making squares all day long.
Right.
And so they're like, oh, I want to make big, thoughtful things. But the reality is like most of the conversations brands are having are on these social platforms or with like a new weird TikTok sticker or Instagram sticker or something like that. Like that gets more impressions and that gets more interesting kind of like dynamic engagement than like a really beautiful website that cost $100,000 and took 2 years,
right.
You know, doesn't matter anymore.
Right. How do you deal with that?
So
that's a little slightly cynical. How do you move forward? Because I mean, you happen to work with clients who do still value those things, is my guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tightrope walk, just like how interesting and how can we still be thoughtful about these things but not spend time on them and still remember the fact that like an Instagram post goes up and then it's forgotten about in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, how do you kind of maintain that like ephemeral feeling like in design and in as part of a brand system? You know what I mean? That's such an interesting way to kind of think about it. It's just like, how do you build a system that then can be pieces of it can be thrown away or used in a way that is kind of disposable And I think the best example I always quote is when Bloomberg magazine or whatever it was did their rebrand in like 2015 or something. And I was like, this is so interesting to see someone embracing the medium. Like they embrace the fact that you don't keep magazines. Like you will be throwing away that magazine at the end of the month. Mm. So they went absolutely bananas, like on design, on the covers. They're just like, we're going to make these covers the weirdest like possible thing you've ever seen. Like, I think they had like a high school picture of Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos or something, or Barack Obama, like just like literally doing like meme culture before meme culture was like a thing on a super respected
financial
financial magazine. Yeah. Like, and I think that that has like, once I saw, and I was in New York when that happened. So I was seeing it every day, seeing it everywhere. And I was just like, this is like the future of design. This is also just like kind of like the future of communication and like disposable quality of brand. And I thought that was really, really interesting. Mm. Now I've kind of evolved from that into the fact that like, you know, phones and everything are in everybody's pockets. Like even in like the, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, people still have access to like Facebook and whatnot. And I think that motion is going to be kind of like the future of whatever. And you can kind of see that happening in like the Web3 world, how everything looks the same, like everything is like moving and spinning and whatnot. And I do think that there will be like a piece of that where like literal communication will be happening like through animation, because like I guarantee like 99% of people still have their sound off on their phone. So you can't have an explainer video, but you can bring back like kinetic typography that was like really popular in 2010. You can bring that back into the fold and kind of use it in a new way, like through Instagram, through kind of these digital places and stuff. So
yeah,
who knows?
It's interesting to think about. Like, I like that idea of almost accepting that there's going to be a disposable nature to what you do as a creator at times, especially if you're sharing online. Accepting that versus like fighting against it. I think it's easy to get frustrated, especially if you're just starting out. If you're just like, man, this doesn't fucking matter. Because like, you're throwing it into the void of Twitter or Instagram or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think like almost accepting and embracing that and building that into a system versus trying to push back against it is really, really smart. Absolutely. I think that it's not even just smart, it's survival. Like I think you have to. Mm-hmm.
And then once you do that, once you embrace it, you start to have fun. You're just like, dude, let me grow myself, because like you start doing things that are a little bit more weird, a little bit more kind of like challenging, or a little bit more kind of pushes the edge of what you're possible, what you thought social media could be, or what you thought communication could be. And that's where you get to the exciting stuff. It's like once you kind of embrace the jail that we're in, like, you know, decorate it nicely.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. I'm curious, maybe as like we can wind down with this, but I'm curious, maybe as like a last kind of big question, what do you think? And you can take it from whatever angle you want, but when it comes to why brand identity is valuable, or what you think is valuable about it, like, I'm really curious why you think it matters, and why, how it's changing. And maybe like for someone who's listening, maybe they have a startup, or maybe they have a brand they're trying to start, or what have you. How would you encourage them to like focus on their brand identity, and why is it important?
Oh yeah. That's so interesting. Like, cause like, I don't think that it's super important all the time at certain stages and whatnot. And this is something that I'm also introducing as my studio is just like, the Exposure Project was the thing that started this new mentality in my head of just like, I don't need to spend 8 weeks making a logo anymore. I just don't. I can do whatever you want in 1 week. I can guarantee that I can do it. But that goes against everything you've ever learned. It's against everything everybody's ever said. And like, you don't have the discovery, you don't have all this like other BS behind it. But my kind of big caveat is that like at certain stages, like I can make you a logo that will get you to a point where you can then start creating equity. And then that's when you should be doing like the rest of the stuff. Like, it's so complex, because when you're first starting a company, like you need to make sure it works. Like, don't spend time on an idea, on a thing. Like, if you're sitting there making like the best logo you've ever seen for like Band-Aids, like, I don't think that's the right move. Mm. Like, you got to make a different Band-Aid first.
Right.
And then you can start building up the kind of like people being like, oh, this is cool. This is interesting. This is a new kind of Band-Aid. It's got like Neosporin built into it. It's great. Then you can start to be like, let's start telling this story. Let's start putting, you know,
sure,
being a little bit more kind of like interesting. But I think in the beginning stages of the growth, and this is kind of tied back to what I was talking about, my time at the gardens or whatever, it's just like, let the weird ideas grow for a little bit because they might take you on a different path. Mm. You know what I mean? And if you start getting locked into creating brand equity from day one, it's just like a little bit irresponsible because then you're closing the doors to the spots that like maybe were the actual thing or maybe was the interesting thing or a new avenue of like customers or something like that, a new avenue of like creators or people that are looking for something that is like a little bit different. Because if you start to just like try to be everybody else, you'll succeed in becoming everybody else because that's what you're trying to do. Mm. You know what I mean? And so if you leave a little bit of space for the brand to kind of like start to evolve on its own without kind of like a symbol or whatever, I think that that's kind of important. But at the same time, and this is what's super complicated, and I was kind of talking to you before we jumped on the call, of like we're just about to launch like one of the companies that we've been working on for the past 4 months, literally from like zero to one. Like we're going from literally nothing to like, we did a logo, we did a website, we did a brand identity, we did a photo shoot, we're doing packaging and all that stuff. And it's like about to come out. And it's also, it feels really good. You know what I mean? Like yeah, it feels really good. It looks really good. It's going into a space that's like really kind of, it needs that legacy vibe to be able to be accepted. And it needs that kind of like medical claim of like, we're real.
Mm.
And so sometimes that's really important to be seen as real. You know what I mean? But then look at the culture of what's going on right now. We have the Anna Delvey thing. We have the Theranos thing. We have the WeWork scammer guy.
Mm-hmm.
We have Tinder swindler or whatever. We got the girl who got like, thought her dog was going to be immortal and then like was stealing money from her restaurant. Like we live in this time of freaking like fake it till you make it. And like all of those people almost made it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they almost did it. And it's like, what was the difference? It's just like brand maybe. Like Anna Delvey had like a pitch deck or something. That was her whole thing. Like she had a cool pitch deck.
Yeah.
And like Fire Festival, like they had a cool website. They had a cool pitch deck. What? Like
Ja Rule.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like, so brand can be really bad. It can be used for really bad things. Mm. And, you know, brand without kind of like the soul, brand without soul can do really, really bad things. And then soul without brand can do really good things. You know what I mean? So we're in this really kind of this nasty world of like, it's so easy to make a pitch deck. It's so easy to look like a millionaire. You know what I mean? Like look at people on Instagram, like crafting their lives to seem like there's no sadness, to seem like there's no anxiety, to seem like there's no hardness. They're like faking themselves being on planes. Like in LA, you can literally go rent a cabin that's in a warehouse where you get to pick the backdrop of the plane window. So it's like you can fake anything.
Yeah.
So having the soul is what's different now. And I think that that is what's really, really important. I don't even know what your question was at this point, but that's where I'm at in terms of just like, you don't really need brand. Anyone can build any brand at any time with anyone. Anyone who knows how to use Illustrator, Photoshop, Canva, Pages, Pitch, whatever, they're all built on templates to make you look successful.
Mm.
When you want to start telling a different story, that's when you should be talking to designers. That's when you should be talking to people who do things differently and can think of things through an artistic angle or a different kind of, perspective.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's almost like you're saying like prove that there's something worth pursuing further to start. You know, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, soul without brand can succeed, but brand without soul can't.
Brand without soul will get you thrown in prison pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah, you'll be Elizabeth Holmes before you know it. Man, well, yeah.
I mean, look at Elizabeth Holmes. She's a perfect example. She obsessed over Apple.
Yeah.
Like she hired this, she was like obsessed with stealing people from Apple. She hired Shia Day. She followed the playbook. At the end of the day, you know, Steve Jobs is kind of like a piece of shit with a great vision.
Right.
She's a piece of shit that's also still a piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
But like her vision got like, it just got so obscured and so, you know, she got obsessed with money and she got obsessed with celebrity and following the steps of brand. And she was obsessed with doing that right, that she forgot about the thing actually working.
Right. Totally. And yeah. That's an easy trap to fall into.
A perfect example.
Yeah. That's an easy trap to fall into, is just to focus too much on appearances or status or what have you, versus like making something that is sustainable, good, adds value, but then eventually, you know, coming at a certain point, it is cool to elevate your brand and to have those conversations, but maybe right off the bat is a bad time to start.
Yeah. I think Ben Pirate or whatever, he was on Twitter. I think he got like little into some like dodgy territory with something he tweeted recently, but like he was obsessed with this idea of pre-brand, and that really kind of like, look it up. I think he's got a website about it, and that has like changed my mind on like a lot of things. It's opened up a lot of kind of territories in terms of like the creative future and this idea of like creating brands day one. You know what I mean? Like, this will get you through the door of to have the conversations with the VCs or have the conversations with your clients and things like that. But doing it in a way that's like responsible, fun, and a much, much lower lift than, you know, full brand identity with somebody like Red Antler or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that Red Ant, like, that's kind of their whole business. They're like, are part of the inception of brands a lot of the time. So totally. they name them, they do the logo, all that stuff before they're even live.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. Pre-brand. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, this was awesome talking to you. I feel like I learned a ton, and you had a lot of gems. Maybe for people who are interested, where do you want people to come find you online?
Smith-diction.com. It's a really kind of top-notch URL, but Smith and Diction looks like smithaddiction.com. So didn't want that. Just our website. Email us, say hello. We're regular people. We're human beings. We sit in this office and, you know, most times we answer emails. So if that's what, don't go to Twitter. I'm terrible on Twitter. Just like, if you don't like design hot takes, then don't follow me. But
yeah,
that's what it
is. No, that's great. That's great. Mike, thanks you so much for being here. It was really, really great.
Cool.
And thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to get more of these sent to your inbox, you can head over to alexhug.com, sign up for the newsletter. As always, leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And last but not least, this episode was edited and produced by Josh Perez. If you are looking for help with your podcast, Josh is the dude. He's a great producer and an even better human being. So please get in touch with him at justjoshperez.com. I'll be back soon with another new episode. So until then, let's go make something cool.